B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Javonte Green will dribble it out. The clock hits triple zeros, and the Celtics, who struggled out of the gate a year ago looking for a signature win, get one in game four tonight, beating the MVP and the Milwaukee Bucks, coming from 19 down to win it going away. A feel-good night if there ever was one. The final score, Boston 116, Milwaukee 105.
Maz, how'd you like that one? You watched that one, Maz?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, pretty good.
How'd you feel about that one?
I thought the second half was pretty good. I thought the first half was a complete clown
show. So they stop again, like they stop playing after 24 minutes? That's it? You just stop judging a team after 24 minutes?
No, I mean, I say bad and good. I add them together.
What does the first half of an NBA game mean?
You mean it doesn't count?
No. 0.0.
So you want to start every game down 19 points or whatever it is?
I'm just saying, why would you come out of that game and say half good, half bad? Really? Do you really feel that way?
I do.
Okay.
Half good, half bad. But since they won, the second half's more important than the first half.
It's Felger Maz Thursday.
C plus.
October 31st from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. If you're just joining us for the first time ever, Maz is not very bullish on the Celtics' chances this year. I am. That's just the backdrop to that sarcasm there to open up the program. I hate inside jokes, just so people know where we're coming from. Seriously.
No, good win for them.
Sarcasm aside, how'd you feel about last night?
Good win for them last night. Good win. I'm not being sarcastic at all. Very good win. They showed a lot of grit. I like what I saw offensively in the second half. And really, there's one thing to me that happened in that game last night that is more important than anything else with the Celtics this year, if you want my honest opinion. One thing and one thing only. Jason Tatum. I think the whole year really is going to be about Jason Tatum. You can talk to me until you're blue in the face about Gordon Hayward or Kemba Walker or Marcus. You can talk all you want about those guys. To me, the key to that game last night was Tatum, and not just the scoring. He had a block on Giannis. He had a couple of rebounds that I thought were good rebounds. He even distributed the ball
on an occasion or two. You could say he's the most important guy on the team.
Yes.
You can say you're more concerned about his development than anything else on the team. Those are two. He was not the key to the game last night.
I think he was.
He was not.
Who was then?
Marcus Smart was the absolute key to the game. 100%. 100% Marcus Smart. 100% Marcus Smart on Giannis. How are you going to defend Giannis? And you guys threw at me Marcus Smart yesterday. I'm like, you know, okay. Nope. He climbed inside his head, took him out of his game. Marcus Smart, both ends of the floor. When you're getting walloped in the first half, if you want to count it, when you get walloped in the first half, Marcus Smart made a few three-pointers that kept you in the thing. He made some threes that kept you in it while you were down. And defensively, his work against Giannis and the whole turnaround there in the third quarter with loose ball stuff and defensive stuff, it started with Marcus last night. Was a Marcus Smart night.
I still say Tatum. I think it was more important that Tatum did what he did last night. And again, it wasn't just about the scoring. So I know what Smart is. But Jason Tatum's got the biggest upside on the team. And last night, again, there were some plays that he made outside of making shots. They weren't big, but they were significant because I felt like it started to run around him a little, not a lot. I thought Tatum was the difference in the game.
Yesterday you said to me, if they win tonight, you know, the weekend didn't move the needle for me. The comeback win over the Raptors, the win against the Knicks doesn't count. They win tonight, get back to me, it'll move the needle. Here we are. Does it move the needle, Maz?
I didn't necessarily say.
Does it move the needle?
Nah, a little bit. A little bit.
I think you said yesterday it would.
Yeah, it does. I'll tell you what, last night was the first night that I have watched them and said, I get what they think they could be. Last night is
What
does that mean?
Well, what do you mean? What does that?
What
mean?
Does that mean? What does that mean?
I think it's pretty clear.
It's mealy mouthed, is what it is.
No, they built the team with a certain vision in mind, and last night was the first time that I saw that. And I said, oh, this is what they thought it would look like. I get it. In the second half, pretty good. Not bad. I also thought the Bucks sucked lemons in the second half. The Bucks were atrocious.
And you don't think the Celtics help affect that?
Not really, no.
Yeah, of course they did.
They did defensively.
How many of those threes were wide open threes?
Milwaukee's flawed, which I told you about. So it's partly on Milwaukee. But the overall team intensity in the third quarter, and again, mostly Marcus Smart and what he did to Giannis, the Celtics played a part in that, Maz. The Celtics played a part.
I don't think the Celtics defense is as good as everyone else did last night. I'm sorry.
Marcus Smart did.
I don't. So Smart played some defense. Great. I also thought Giannis was kind of going through emotions for much of the game. What did he have, four shots at halftime? And they were up. But how many more do you have in the third quarter? Four more? Eight shots? So when Giannis wants to take over and go and be around the basket and go to the rim, you're not stopping.
I disagree. I think you can. And maybe you don't watch me as much as I do, but I see it routinely.
Yeah, you didn't get the Bucks' best last night.
Of course you didn't.
You didn't get the Bucks' best.
But I think you were part of that. And this thing about Giannis can get it when he wants it is not true. It is not. I've been telling you this. I don't just say it to say it. He doesn't get what he wants. He's not LeBron yet. He's not Kawhi Leonard. He's not. I thought their offense, the Bucks' offense, was stupid last night. He starts with the ball in his hands out in the perimeter. And I've told you this a million times, he can't create his own shot out there. He'll shoot a 30-foot three-pointer, and if you give him a lane and he gets a little crease, he'll go to the rim, but there's nothing in between. And so how many of their offensive sets started with him with the ball on the perimeter and nothing happened?
Too many. I don't dispute
but,
that.
But also,
you tell me in a big game, is that how they're going
to
do it?
Yes. And I saw it last year. The Raptors did it to him four straight. It happens. Yes, I've seen it.
How many times did Middleton touch the ball during that 29?
Overrated.
Is he? Because it felt to me like he was the only one that started making shots there in the second half.
Middleton's overrated.
He's not overrated.
Oh, he's so overrated.
He's their best shooter. He's their best shooter.
Yeah, but he's
also a plodding idiot at times. You see him like fall over, and it definitely wasn't a foul, and they call a foul on the Celtics. And Stevens had already used his challenge against it. I mean, Maz, it's okay to say they had a good win last night.
I said they had a good win.
That moved the needle for you, Murray. So you're an easy mark. I know I can get you on my side easy.
I thought
Celtics
going to
contend in the East this year, Murray?
Yes,
we got them already.
the third best team in the East. That's what I had them at anyway.
No. Are they going to contend to come out of the East this year?
Yeah, they could. That was a good win last night.
He's already moved. Game four, he's already moved.
I'm not moving. I'm right where I am.
I knew Murray would be
said
there.
I always said that they could. I have them slotted as the third team in the East. They could. They're one of the better teams in the East. I was kind of with you. I thought you overrated them.
Jim the jellyfish.
Don't put this on. No, I just go with what my eyes tell me. Don't try to shame me into this. That was a hell of a win for them.
I'm not shaming you
night.
At all. I knew I'd have you after
I'm
last night.
I'm shaming you. I am. I'm shaming you. Jim the jellyfish Murray. Jellyfish Murray.
I think Stu sent me these stats that is really a nouveau thing that, of course I hate. Like, it's all about win percentage now. Like, is this how kids watch the game? They watch the game on their phones next to some stat thing that shows you what your win percentage is at any given time? Like, is that how people follow games now?
They do have that stat. I don't pay any attention to it.
I think it's a big thing.
After the fact.
Frankly, I think it's more for the gambling community than anything else.
Is it a gambling thing?
I think so, yeah.
Well, it's become a stat that is really, I don't know, that's become prominent. So I asked him to look up, and I don't blame him for not looking it up, but
I stole from the Celtics game notes, to be truthful.
I got it, babe. I got it. So last year, Celtics wins when their win probability dropped under 8%. Last night, there was a point in the third quarter where their win probability was 7.1%. Okay? 7.1% at one point in the third quarter. They were still down 15 or something, I think, in the third quarter.
They were about halfway through.
And so that's when their win percentage dropped to 7.1%. Last year, when their win probability dropped below 8%, they won only three ball games. Only three. And you already have one. And in my mind's eye, and so what I asked was, point comebacks. How many, 15-point comebacks did they have last year? How many 15-point comebacks did they have the year before? Maybe Tucker or, a Stat Geek or Rest in Peace, or I'm talking about Boston Sports. If one of our nerds can maybe look that up. In the past, pre-Kyrie, this was a team that routinely came back, routinely, it was like a calling card.
Part of their identity.
Of the Isaiah Thomas Celtics, that no game was truly done. Even if they didn't win, they'd come back and it'd be a last possession game. And they had all these comebacks that just happened routinely, night after night. For example, when their win probability was below 8% in 2018, they won 10 games. That dropped to 3 last year. So they almost never came back last year. Now 4 games in, they've already got one. And the Raptors one was like a mini one. They were down double digits for much of that Raptors game. So they're already doing it, which is really what I thought would happen.
Yeah.
Isn't it something when you don't hate each other and you actually come out and you can play and you care about winning and you care about, you know, and you're not at each other's throats because of the a-hole in the room? And this is what has happened to the Celtics, maybe almost overnight.
Yeah, they were going to get their culture back. I don't dispute that. Again, and they'll play harder, they'll be more likable, all that stuff. The talent's not as good.
I mean, I thought it was evident going back to the game on Friday against Toronto where Kemba Walker starts to heat up in that fourth quarter and Jaylen Brown takes an ill-advised shot and, you know, the coach and everyone in the building loses their mind. And at the time, Kemba Walker got hot, but after the game, it was all peace and love. Couldn't have been better. And in fact, Kemba Walker was like, I get it, man. Like, he's a good player, can take shots. Like, you could tell this team genuinely likes each other, unlike last year.
So they have that. So,
absolutely, they do. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, they should. We'll see. It's 4 games in, but I think you're already seeing signs of it where they're coming back in these ball. I mean, last year that thing would have been a 20-point loss. They just would have played out the string and gotten, you know, whatever in the second half and not won. I mean, that's what happened last year in those Bucks games.
Absolutely.
So you got that back, you think, or that's a sign that you have that back. The talent thing, Maz, I mean, I think you just got to look at that too. I mean, Horford to me is still the bigger loss.
Preacher of the choir on that one. I said that. I think Horford was their glue. And I mean that on the floor. Horford was their glue. This is why I say to you, the big variable is Tatum.
Okay. And the way they run their offense. Kemba Walker's obviously not Kyrie Irving. But so if he's 10-15% less, but they like each other and play hard, I think you make up the. I think you net out to be the same.
No, you don't.
I think you do, and no, I think you will, and I think you'll see it.
Yeah,
so, I mean, this is going to be a slow, painful process for the Kyrie people like you to, because it just doesn't compute. And you don't want to come around and just say it that they're better off without him. They made a mistake to get him, and it set them back. And they're better off with him. They'll be better without him. It's going to be a hard thing to come to grips with, but eventually it may take until April, but you'll get there.
Okay, so first of all, I resent the notion that I am a quote-unquote Kyrie person. I'm not a Kyrie person. I think Kyrie's an a-hole. What I am is a talent person.
Oh, no, right,
read
what that
mug.
Represents.
Read the mug. The mug here says, slut for talent. That's what the mug says that I was given by the intern. See, I'm holding it up for the camera. The mug says, slut for talent. That's what I am. A slut for talent. I will take talent, 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 especially in the NBA.
But you don't even believe that because I know you. You wouldn't have taken Carmelo Anthony in his prime, and you're not taking James Harden in his prime. And those guys are supremely talented guys. And so what you're reluctant to do is put Kyrie into that category, which is what he is. He's Carmelo. And now that he's not a Celtic, I can say it and you won't like it. When I've been saying it for 2 years, but now we're all on the same page. Isn't that nice? Eventually you'll realize that you know that there is a line with talent. DeMarcus Cousins, Carmelo Anthony, James Harden. You'd have all the talent in the world, but if you're a certain kind of guy, it doesn't work. Oh. Kyrie's that guy.
Okay, so he might be, again, which is why I say Kyrie can't be your best player. By the end of the year, I had come around on that. I said Kyrie can't be your best player, but he's way more talented than anybody they have on the team right now. Way more.
Okay, but I just think they're going to be a better team. I thought Gordon Hayward was more encouraging than Jason Tatum.
He was good last night. He was good. I'm telling you,
I love his game. I love his little slash mid-range game. Like, that's so refreshing. Talk about something Giannis could use. You know,
he needs a turnaround or something.
He
something
needs an 8-foot shot.
Yeah, something out of the post that he can turn around and just make a bread and butter.
Well, not just that, but teams are smart, are getting smart on him, and the Celtics know it. Take the charge.
And they play that spin move.
Stand there and let him spin right into you or put his big butt into you and go down, flop. And that's what Marcus Smart does. And so if Giannis could just stop at the elbow, stop at the free throw line, and just pop, I mean, that's what he needs. But that's what Gordon Hayward was doing last night.
Hayward was good. Yeah, Hayward was good. Again, he and Tatum, I thought, were probably the two best Celtics. And I just put a premium on Tatum because of the upside. I don't think Hayward's getting any better. Hayward is who he is. So I'm and it's not
but compared to last year.
Oh, I disagree.
What do you mean?
Hayward.
No, no, he's way better than he was last year, but his ceiling is known. We know what his ceiling is based on how he played in Utah.
Well, he's not there yet, though. I haven't felt like he hit whatever his alleged ceiling was in Utah. I don't feel like he's been that guy here.
Tatum's ceiling, if Tatum reaches it, is higher than Gordon Hayward's. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, signature win, four games in. Signature win, what does it mean? Does it mean we're getting a basketball season? First signs of it? Your thoughts right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hayward grabs the rebound at the free throw line. He's on the move with Tatum. Finds him.
No!
A false pass and a big flush for Tatum. Timeout, Mike Budenholzer. But the double-digit lead he has had all night now belongs to the Celtics.
Put your helmet down, son! Put it down!
A 33-9 run, and it's the Celtics that lead by 11.
One of the signature plays in, I think, a signature win for the Celtics last night. What does that mean? It shows you what they're capable of. And then they contend in the East. Then they contend to come out of the East.
Milwaukee was asleep.
Milwaukee's flawed. Do you think I make it up when I say that?
No.
Milwaukee's deeply flawed.
Yeah, I never said Milwaukee was perfect. I never picked them to win the title.
I mean, I'm sorry, including the coach. So they're giving up this big run.
I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
And they have a big size advantage, right? I mean, not just Giannis, but Lopez, his twin brother. I mean, they got size all over the place.
And they just kept hucking threes.
And they just bombs away. And I understand that's what the NBA is. That's what you are. That's what everybody is. And that's what the analytics say. Like, I get it. But there comes a time where it's situational to the game and the other team's on the big run and you've gone cold and it's time to slow down the game and get to or go to the line or whatever. And they just refuse to do it. And they have the personnel to do it. So this is where Giannis has no low post game to speak of. Like, you can't put him on the block and dump it in there. I mean, I guess you can, but they don't really do it that way.
They should. They should do more of that. And that was my gripe with Milwaukee. Milwaukee went 5 of 23 from three-point distance in the second half. And they took 39 shots overall. So they only took 16 shots inside the arc.
Just keep launching.
16.
It's who they are. But it's not just that approach. They're a nice team. Giannis cannot take over the game offensively if you don't let him. If there was almost no fast breaking last night. So unless Giannis is in the open floor on the fast break, in the half court when he starts with the ball out on the perimeter, it's so stupid. I mean, I know what they want to do. They want him to penetrate and then kick out to the three. But that doesn't mean he's getting his. Unless you post him, what's he going to do out there? He has no mid-range game. And it's... So they're just that there's a ceiling there to that, and that catches up to them. It should if the Celtics were a functional team, they would have figured it out last year and beat them last year. But Toronto ultimately did. So that's the number one seed, and they're flawed.
And you weren't kidding about Giannis at the free throw line.
Oh my God!
Holy crap!
Thank you.
Like I thought that might have been like a hitch in his giddy up, but they were talking about it at least on the ESPN feed.
Oh,
he don't need a shooting coach. He needs a shrink.
He
needs help.
Nope.
That's a mental thing.
Chuck Knoblauch, whatever you want to say. And that's a big deal. So maybe there's a reason he's not attacking the rim like he used to, because he doesn't want to go to the line because he's all in his head.
I mean, I'd be worried about that if I were them, because that's a problem.
Okay, Jimmy, I'm jammed up, of course. If you could, let's just start with Luke on line one in Vermont. Chief Green Teamer out there in the Green Mountain State. Luke, what do you think?
It was a big win, and it was a lot to do with Marcus Smart, because he does whatever it takes to win. And the last night, it was a lot about defense. But with Jaylen Brown being out, they also needed more scoring. And that's where he stepped up and made shots. No, Maz, Marcus Smart isn't going to shoot like that every night. But he has the ability to morph into what you need to win, and that's why it was about him. But, Maz, you've already admitted that Philly's flawed. You just admitted Milwaukee's flawed. Why can't you admit that Boston has a chance to come out of the East, especially when we know the NBA is a three-point contest?
Well, because everybody in the East is flawed. It's a question of how flawed, and ultimately, if you go head-to-head, what are your chances of winning? I just don't think they have the size to match up with those other two teams. And so, look, last night was a nice night. I don't begrudge them that. It doesn't change my big-picture feeling about the Celtics.
It was a Marcus Smart night, though. That was Marcus Smart was the key to that game.
He was one of them.
He was the key to that game.
I still think that run to me went in the late third quarter, early fourth. I thought Tatum showed things he hasn't shown before. At least, not, and he may not show them consistently. But to me, if he can block a shot, grab a key rebound or two, dish the ball when someone else is open. Like, that's what I'm looking for. If that happens, I know he can score. If he does those other things, he'll become an all-star.
Wayne in Yarmouth, you're up next. Hi.
You got the juices flowing, you two guys, and the point about you are raising is valid in terms of what this is as a team. You've now got five guys that are in strong double digits, averaging, and they play together, and their heads are together. I think that's the difference. And I think, Maz, as great as you are in so many ways, you're missing the point about the impact of a great team versus just having a superstar.
No, I'm not.
So listen, Wayne, on this, I'm with them. Like, the character thing, the chemistry thing, the playing together, there's a definite ceiling to that in the NBA.
In the NBA, right?
No question.
We've seen it.
Like, in hockey, you can almost win a cup with that thing.
Sure.
By outworking a team and so, but in basketball, I get it, and I agree. I agree. I think you're underrating the talent. I think you're underrating the talent. I think you're underrating the fatal flaws of the other teams. And when I say underrating the talent, you think these players are just at a certain level because that's what they are. I think that they couldn't reach their level last year because it was a cluster on that team and they hated each other. And now that that's gone, they can reach their full potential and they'll be better than you think they are.
Okay, so the way I look at it is your ceiling is the talent of your best player. That's how I look at it. Okay, I'm trying to put this in terms that will allow for us all to understand it. So their best player this year, the ceiling is lower than it was last year. They didn't reach their ceiling last year. That, no one argues that. Like that, absolutely. But their best player this year is not as good as he was a year ago. Now, I know it didn't work a year ago. I'm just telling you that when it really comes down to it, in a big moment, they're going to have a problem.
Okay, is this Ben in Marshfield? Or is this Dowie in Rhode Island?
This is Dowie 6 in Rhode Island.
Okay, Dowie 6, go ahead.
Maz, I don't know how much that macaroni award means to you, but it's Michael and Murray that's carrying you.
Is that what?
You are ridiculous, man. Last night's game is proof that Kemba is better for this team. Last year's team, they would have crumbled and called it a night.
Agreed.
That makes Kemba way better than Kyrie Irving.
So now that's what, I'm not with you. I'll give back my Marconi.
Macaroni Award.
I think there's a little ethnic slur in there.
That's okay. I'll take it.
But
unlike other people in this day and age, I'm not going to file a complaint.
I'll get back to Marconi if you need me to admit or me to say that Kemba Walker is better than Kyrie Irving. He's not. But what I think the argument is
the collective whole.
If he's 10-15% worse, but he allows you collectively to be better, are you better off with him? And that's where I'm at. And it's a hard thing for NBA talent whores.
Sluts.
talent sluts to wrap their head around. Because generally it is all about talent in that league. Generally. But it's not an absolute. And sometimes the baggage that comes along with that talent brings you down. And so, Kyrie was one of those guys.
So to the Dowie 6 guy, and it was a Dave before him who yes. said to me that, you know, they will play better together. They'll achieve a greater height to what they would have otherwise achieved. True. Yes. I don't argue that point.
Because you did argue that point before.
No. What I said
was... You had him under on the win total. 49.5, over under.
I do have him under.
Still?
Yeah.
You haven't moved on that?
No.
Murray was also under. Are you now over Murray?
No, I'm still sticking with mine.
Good job, Murray.
Oh, wait, I thought I had you in the first segment there. No, now you've gone back?
Say goodbye to Jim the Jellyfish.
They're over 49.5, and they're over game five in the second round.
Under,
over.
Under.
Okay. So that's the line of demarcation. That's the line of demarcation. Are they over, under 49.5, over, under five games in the second round?
Under.
I had them over from day one, and last night showed me just what they're going to be. Continue with your thoughts on this. Get some World Series thoughts as well after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Outside target, Chirinos the pitch. Swinging a line drive, slice down the right field line toward the corner. Springer back, looking up, and this one is gone. It hits the foul pole, and the Nationals lead. Howie Kendrick has done it again. A slicing two-run homer off the right field foul pole. Do you believe it, Howie Kendrick? Part two. Nationals 3 and the Astros 2.
Quick World Series thoughts. That was the key blow, Howie Kendrick, off of what the reliever's name is?
It was Will Harris, I think.
Will Harris, who had been overused by Hinch to begin with. And that was his, I think, his first batter after they took out Zach Greinke, who was nails in that game last night. And a lot of people are second-guessing Hinch for that move. Your thoughts?
So the big thing to me was, how do you not get Cole into the game? I you know, now the Greinke thing, Greinke was awesome, and I understand people questioning it, and I'm not telling you you're wrong. It's a legit second guess. Zach Greinke, me personally, scares the crap out of me. I feel like he is a freaking accident waiting to happen.
But how'd he look?
He was dynamite last night. He was dynamite. And again, but once they, you know, once there was a home run and then a walk, I went, uh-oh.
He looked a little shook after that Rendon home run.
Yeah, so I don't know, and he's like that. He will melt. So,
but at 80 pitches, I mean, he was dealing. He looked
no question.
80 pitches.
It was an absurdly low number. And I would go so far as to tell you that I said this to someone off the air. I thought he was like borderline Maddox-esque last night. He was dynamite. The way he was working the corners, changing speeds, you know, changing direction. He was going ball moving away, ball moving in. Like he was up and down all, and he was throwing everything for strikes. He was terrific. Terrific. So legit second guess. My bigger one, even after you blow the lead 3-2, is how do you not get Gerrit Cole into that game?
So Greinke's one thing, but then going to Harris as opposed to Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole never got in the game. He was warming up out there, right?
Yes, so, in the sixth inning.
It's Houston's equivalent of benching Butler. It's incomprehensible as to why Gerrit Cole, who if the Astros win, I think would have been the MVP, that he doesn't get in that game. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. You know what this was like to me? You remember the game Baltimore played a few years back when Showalter didn't put Britton in the game in Toronto?
Yeah.
Right? Zach Britton, he had his best pitcher available. They went to extra innings and he didn't use him and he lost. And it's like, what are you doing? Now, in this case, last night, Hinch said after the game, well, I was waiting for him to put him in when we had the lead or tie to win the game. So wait a minute. It's 3-2 going into the eighth and that's not good enough? In game seven of the World Series? Like, the whole idea of I was going to put him in when we have a lead. You know what that is? That's the way you manage workload during the season. There's a reason why you have guys that you pitch when you're ahead and guys that you have when you're behind. And it's so that you're not pitching the same guys every night and you distribute the workload. Fine, you have better guys and worse guys. Game seven of the World Series is the night you decide you're not going to use your best pitcher?
It's all hands on deck. That's what makes no sense. You're not talking about like, well, we're going to manage him for another game. This is it. There's not another game. He's not even going to be on your team next year, Gerrit Cole. Get him in the game.
Murray's right. Utterly idiotic.
I want to blame the nerds for everything. So honestly,
I think you're right too.
Well, but I think there's a trickle-down effect here where managers have lost the feel for the game because it's just driven on the matchups that they're given before the game. And without watching how the pitcher's actually pitching, what that specific game situation might entail. So I think Hinch is just not, he's not wired to make these decisions in the moment because so few are made in the moment. They're made before the game with the three-ring binder.
Absolutely.
And the whole thing about the third time through the lineup is just such a rote thing. And Matt McCarthy on 98.5 The Sports Hub wrote a great column about this. On our website, He said, last night was not just a win for the Nationals and a loss for the Astros. It was a resounding victory for common sense and a damning indictment of analytics data and the nerdification of baseball. He says the nerds were exposed on baseball's biggest stage, and it was glorious to watch. A.J. Hinch's decision to pull Zach Greinke was one of the worst managerial moves in World Series history. He cost his team a title because he couldn't see the game unfolding in front of him. What a robot. Hinch took Greinke out because the data warns managers not to let their pitchers face a lineup the third time through the order. The analytics will tell you that starters struggle or the deeper into the game they get, but the numbers can't possibly quantify how a pitcher actually looks in that moment. And wow, did Greinke look good, he says.
He did. He looked awesome. And again, if that is at the core, I'm not going to argue that side of it. I mean, Matt makes excellent points. Because they all do think that. The Tampa Bay Rays did it with against the Red Sox early in the year with the Glasnow kid. He was dealing. They took him third time through the lineup.
Third time through. Third time through.
Idiotic.
Third time through.
And the contrast is interesting, too. Because
it's like you get Carmine to say third time through. Third time through. Third time through. It doesn't matter what they look like. Doesn't matter. Third time through.
There's like a flashing red warning light in the dugout.
Third time through.
Pitcher goes third time through the lineup. The contrast the night before. Remember that the night before, Martinez sent Strasburg out for the ninth. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, talk about totally opposite. He said, my guy is freaking dealing. I'm sending him out for the ninth.
McCarthy writes, in the seventh inning, Greinke threw one bad pitch and gave up a solo home run to Rendon. Then he walked Juan Soto after getting squeezed on a pitch at the bottom of the zone. He was still strong, had only thrown 80 pitches, and had just allowed two hits. But Hinch couldn't recognize any of that. He panicked. He went to the mound and pulled a future Hall of Famer who was dealing in Game 7 of the World Series. Again, a future Hall of Famer throwing a two-hitter in Game 7 of the World Series done at 80 pitches. That can't be repeated enough. It's complete insanity, says McCarthy. So good job to McCarthy.
His column was awesome.
Yeah, it was very good. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whenever, that never would have been even in play. Never. You wouldn't even think about it. We wouldn't even sit there and go, ooh, do you pull him? We would never even ask the question. You'd leave him in there.
Meanwhile, the Astros, the best team of their time, a much better club than Washington. I'm going to tell you, Washington sucks. I mean, they're a fine National League team. But the Astros are loaded. That is a talented, talented team.
They've won more games than any team in baseball over the last 3 years, and by a lot. By like 10 games.
100 wins 3 years in a row. World Series, ALCS, back to the world. And with their arrogance. Only won one.
But their never have a pitcher pitch to a batter for the third time, though a lineup.
With their arrogance and their reliance on analytics, do you see them winning another World Series? Because I don't. I don't.
The talent's there.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule them out.
They're the 90s Braves. That's what they are now. You're going to get your one token World Series. You're loaded, and you're going to find a way to fail time and again when you get there.
I mean, really, they send Verlander out there. He goes 0-6 in his career in the World Series. Then they pull Greinke, and again, Greinke scares me, so I don't kill him for that. But everything McCarthy says and that you guys are saying is right. Okay? Again, I'm just talking about Greinke scares the crap out of me. And then you've got the probable Cy Young Award winner out there in your bullpen. He's warmed up. He wants to pitch. And you don't bring him in with 3-2 game, even if you didn't want to bring him in mid-inning. How do you not bring him in the eighth?
Right.
What the hell are you saving him for?
Okay, so there are your World Series thoughts. We'll mix them in with that Celtics win last night. Again, signature win for a team that looks like it's going to have a basketball season? Question mark?
I hope so.
Maz is still reluctant.
I hope so.
We'll figure out where Murray is. It changes every segment. Your calls. Long commercial-free segment next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It'll be another 3-2 pitch to Michael Brantley. Hudson sets the kick, and here it comes. Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss!
this. And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books. The celebration is on. The Washington Nationals are the world champions. Remember where you are so you remember where you are right now at 11:50 Eastern Time. Remember where you are on October 30th, 2019 when the Washington Nationals finish the fight from the depths of a forgettable 19-31 start. They have climbed to the top of baseball's highest peak.
I'm going to guess that's Nationals radio. It's a good call. I liked it. I like that call. Okay, your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on the Celtics? All up to you. Junior in Brockton, what do you got for us on the C's?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Junior. Go.
How you doing, buddy? I just want to say, last night they played real good. Pocket Smart, it was definitely, he took over last night. He got in Jonas's head. He got in his head, and he kind of played like Rahman and Artez in a way.
I think he's, you know, a key to your team. I think he's not your best player, but I think...
I think he's their leader.
He is their leader.
It's their team. They're his team. Like that thing. That's what I mean. He's the heartbeat of the team.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but just in terms of tenure, he should be. He should be the leader of the team. Not just even with, I mean, it obviously starts with his attitude and all that, like, you know, dirt dog thing that he does on, and he'll make all those Marcus Smart plays, but, you know, tenure alone, like, he's the leader of the team.
I thought he was the key to the win last night. Absolutely. It started with Giannis just being a pedestrian for most of that game, a bystander, and I think that was largely because of Marcus Smart. They played him smart. You said, how are they going to stop him? I've seen teams stop him, and teams are getting smart. In just what I watched, take the charge on him. Take the charge. He has no stop-and-pop game. So if he does get through the first level and he begins his drive, you just stand there. He'll run into you. He's not going to stop and try and pop a little 6-footer, 8-footer, which if he did, forget about it. But he doesn't. And I just think Smart crawled in his head. And I think it started there. I think Marcus Smart was the absolute key to that ballgame.
I mean, you know what he doesn't get enough credit for is how smart he is defensively. I don't know if which broadcast you watched.
ESPN.
Okay, so I did too. And Doris Burke made a great point at one point because Tice was late in stepping into an area that Giannis was going to spin into. And Smart looked at him and said, like, dude, you got to step in there.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's going that way.
Yep.
Right? He knows. And so I give Smart credit for that. He's a smart defensive player.
We've got Gary in Brockton on the game last night, the World Series game, I mean. Hi, Gary.
Hey, what's happening, guys? It's really too bad that Hinch is going to get second-guessed, and I think he should. I mean, you got Cy Young on the mound. He is dealing. He is dealing. And pitching the contact, and what goes through his head is that you can't tell me he didn't base his decision on how fast that Greinke could throw the ball. Because he had every opportunity to leave the cat in there. He was dealing. It was unbelievable.
Well,
unbelievable. Here's what a manager in today's baseball does in the late innings. Let's go get a lefty that throws 95.
Right. Is there a lefty up? Let's get a left. I mean, and I know that's old as dirt, but I think the modern manager has lost his feel for the game. Because it's so analytic-driven.
There's no question.
And so predetermined that they have a hard time identifying when a guy...
Bullpen. Don't let Zach pitch to the lineup a third time.
Third time through. It's all predetermined, and so they've lost their feel for a game in the game. And Maz said this to me off the air yesterday. How many, like... All these managers have become babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're former players with no managerial experience who just know how to relate in the room and maybe motivate a guy. Or babysit, but they're not. You know, how could Aaron Boone, who had never managed T-ball, manage a team? Well, answer, because all the decisions are made by the chief of baseball. You know, all these new titles of the nerds.
Absolutely.
So, how many managers, old school managers, are there in the game? And there's only like a couple. Who'd you come up with?
There are three or four, I think. Again, Ron Gardenhire's one. He might be sort of the poster boy of your classic old school, you know, tobacco spitting manager. Francona, I think, is another one. I think he qualifies, even though he's in the last 20 years. He's still someone I think that will make a read or a judgment, you know, and sort of in real time.
Guys that do it on feel.
Yeah. Not entirely, but at least some. Yeah. Right enough.
He manages the game. He just does. Doesn't apply the analytics.
Yeah. In fact, I remember Francona saying things like, well, you know, why, I would say to him, why'd you make this move? And he said, well, that guy throws strikes better under pressure. It wasn't matchup, yeah. Right? It was, I've seen that guy under pressure when he throws strikes.
The nerds don't compute pressure.
I mean,
they don't believe in clutch and late.
So I think the older managers have a tendency to do that. Girardi's now back in the game.
That's one.
With Philadelphia. So I think he qualifies to a degree.
Madden, you don't put on that list.
I don't, because I think Madden is a big-time analytics guy. I think he was really one of sort of the new wave. I think we get tricked because of his age.
Yeah.
But he is very much an analytics guy.
Mez,
hardcore.
Based on, because if you read anything about that Cubs World Series a few years ago, he mattered in terms of like the off the field stuff. What about David Ross now that he's the manager there?
I think new age.
New age. He's never, the guy goes right from the broadcast booth.
I just wonder though, because there was all this talk that he calming guys down and like he had the feel of the room and getting guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying these guys do, Murray. But they don't look out at the field and say, this guy's hot, this guy's not, I'm going to make an instinct move. All the moves are determined by the three-ring binder that he's handed by the nerds before the game.
Yes. Absolutely.
The thing that Ross does exactly is all these guys do.
Now,
if you
were to say to me, as a catcher, did Ross sit back there and say, I'm calling this pitch because this guy throws it more consistently than another one? Yes. Will he be that way as a manager?
No way.
Theo and Ross say differently.
Yeah, right. That's what they all say.
There's going to be a combination.
Well, no, this is why I played the cut by Heimboom yesterday. Yeah. You know, will you admit when you set the lineup card? Well, I said no, because we never do it, and it's all about collaborative. Lie.
You're not wrong about Ross as a player.
I'm just asking, because I found that hire. I was like, oh, I guess this one kind of makes sense. Maybe they'll actually let him manage, because it felt like he had feel, you know?
I think they brought him in there because the players like him. They'll respond to him, and they need someone that the players will respond to again. In terms of the X's and O's or the decision-making, it's coming from the books.
And so how many guys, managers, are there now that manage on their own versus the books? There's less than a handful.
Mike, I'm telling you, look at the list of managers in Major League Baseball. Wait till I read you some of the names. Okay, Lovello we know because he was here. Brian Snitker, David Bell. Craig Counsell, whom you know, first of all, there's a bunch of vacancies.
Okay, but
in the National League. Mike Schilt.
Without doing this, no one's ever heard of any of these guys.
But this is my point. None of these guys. They're all just guys that you just plug in. I'm not going to read them all. I'm just telling you that they're all guys that they pull out and plug in that nobody knows, have no real acumen. It's just about making people comfortable.
Correct.
Pull them out of the minor league system. They're now hiring pitching coaches from college.
Correct. And so now when you get in a big game, you got to make an in-game decision. They're not equipped. They have no feel for the game. I think that's
alert. Alert. Third time. Take him out.
Exactly. And that's what happened with Greinke last night. Here's Sam in the car on the Celts. Hi, Sam.
Hey, guys. This one's for Tony. Tony, you've been saying that last year they had a higher ceiling with Irving, but I'd have to disagree with that because Irving as an individual talent has a very high ceiling, but as a teammate, he sucks, and he's terrible, and it shows just by the quick four games they played this year. The guy is not a team player, and the ceiling is never going to be higher when you have someone like him on your team.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, so I was just going to say, so if you could have Kyrie Irving and Durant right now as a tandem, you wouldn't take them because of Kyrie?
So, and I was about to say, let's go a little easy with the never win with Kyrie. He done won one, and he was one of the key guys in winning one. And I think he's a bad fit for this team at this time. Okay? It wasn't going to work with him on this team at this time. You pair him with another superstar and he's the second guy, or it's just a superstar mix and he's one of them, and now maybe we're talking about something different or an older team or whatever that case may be, cuz it did work with them. Let's not get stupid. He did win one, he was a key part of it. So this stuff about you'll never win with Kyrie is asinine.
Yeah, I just think, see, now this gets a little crazy. The whole thing gets a little crazy. And I wish the NBA weren't like this, okay? But it's a talent league. And if you don't have a great player, you're not going to win. In fact, we keep citing the one example is that Pistons team, okay? But, you know, other than that, name me another one. Where is it? Like, it just doesn't exist. So how many NBA champions have there been over the year? 70? However many it's been?
Yeah, I just don't put Kyrie on that list. So
what do you mean?
Like, I think you say, well, you can win it all with Kyrie as your number one player, and I don't put him there.
No, I changed my mind on that at the end of last season. If he's your best player, if he's your leader and your best player, no good.
He's also not good enough. He's not big enough. Doesn't impact both ends of the floor, as you say this all the time.
So that's probably right.
Okay? So he's just not the guy. He can be the second guy, a real good vice president, 1A, 1B. He can be that. But it's got to be the right mix. And maybe even just for a short period of time. But he wasn't right for you. He didn't make you better. It was a mistake to bring him in the first place. For all of you still fighting it, you'll get there eventually. You're seeing little snippets of it already 4 games in. But that's just the case. You'll all come around to it eventually. When the Celts are deep in the Eastern Conference Finals, you'll have to give it up. We continue with your thoughts after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.
I'm a slot for numbers, not time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.